Visualization today is about rainbow light, the light of our own aura and the light of all those around us. Swamiji says, first imagine various people that you know or the people in this room. Picture them in your mind's eye. But instead of seeing the bodies as solid physical forms, see each person radiating an aura of light. All the different colors of the rainbow. Individuals putting out several colors at the same time. Maybe just specializing in one color. Feel how the atmosphere wherever people are gathered is really a celebration of rainbow light. Souls that are sad emanate less light. Those whose consciousness is clouded with selfishness, unkindness, fear, the colors of their aura are duller, more muddy. The clarity of their consciousness is reflected in the colors of their aura. As we move among people, these different fields of light wash over us. Those whose consciousness is uplifting emanate bright, dynamic light. Swamiji, when he was here, his aura is a bright indigo blue, same color he was wearing. Feel the power of that indigo blue aura as it reaches out, even from a great distance. But not all colors are equally beneficial for us to receive. So we must also at all times carry around ourselves a protective aura of our own inner light. So feel for a moment the energy field which is you. Being in the spine, feeling the breath, or more subtly, the energy flowing up and down the spine. Feel how that energy vibrating through the chakras, going up, circulating through the chakras, creates a magnetic field that manifests as light. Visualize the power of your own aura, completely surrounding you in an outward moving field of clear, bright light. Visualize whatever color you prefer, or no color at all, as long as it's clear and bright, and see how the life force itself, life force flowing in through the medulla, circulating through the chakras, this eternally self-generating flow of light. Feel how that light emanating from the center of yourself effortlessly goes through flesh and bone. Creates a moving ball of light, which is our own self. And feel how the light of others touches the edge of that aura. And where the lights match, the auras may merge. And where others are perhaps dark or duller, the bright light of our aura can help illuminate theirs. But even when in contact, physically or in spirit, with others whose auras are darkening, Let the power of our own light be such that no ray of that darkness can penetrate. Feel that this force field is the magnetic power that draws to us all that we set our minds to achieve. Please recite this affirmation with me. In thee alone, I am truly free. Freedom is forever mine. In thy light, in thee alone, I am truly free. Freedom is forever mine. In thy light, in thee alone, I am truly free. Freedom is forever mine. In thy light. Om. Peace. Amen. I decided that I would stay on chapter 5, lesson 5. Just seemed to be more that needs to be said. Any questions or thoughts or comments about anything? I think all of you saw Swami's blue outfit, which I thought this class would particularly enjoy seeing since I had talked to you all about it so much. It proved to be a huge success. So I was telling some of you, we have a friend who's here from Assisi, Maya Devi and Helmut, a couple. And there's a woman in the Assisi community whose profession it is to take fashion designs and turn them into patterns. So she's going to take what we've created so far and perfect it. There's a lot of things that need to be perfected and then make pattern from it. So the project is done. It was a great success. Yes, bravo, bravo. I felt just the same. And it became, as you all well know, a great object lesson in manifestation, and he actually wore it. So, great fun. He was very pleased. Yes, Brenda. Shudras, the lowest caste. I said, you know what my response to that is? Go figure. I have no idea. And when we first heard that, we just thought, oh, piffle. I mean, my response was extremely rude, which is, how can one caste, especially what's considered to be a low caste, own the color of the spiritual eye? It just seemed wacko, but they were absolutely emphatic in India that there just was no chance in the world that he could take that color and elevate it to a color of renunciation. It just, nobody would accept it. The truth of it was divinely inspired because it was much too dark a color. Yeah. Well, the indigo was really beautiful, but it was a very dark color, and because I worked with it a lot, and the more I worked with it, the more I really didn't like it. But this color, blue, the more I had my hands on it and was looking at it and working with it, the more I just loved it. It's a happy color, this color. This color was an accident. He actually chose a different color, a much softer, more subtle color, and we took it to this dye company in San Jose, which has always just been spot on with its colors. And the man was having a really bad day, and he missed a color, just totally. This color that he gave us back is not at all the color we gave him. But there was no time to do anything about it. But this color is much better than the one we chose. Isn't that funny? The one we chose was too subtle. This one is really a happy color. And as far as we can tell, you know, colors have names. We're not entirely certain yet, but we think the name of this color is blue. We think this is the source of all color, you know, Persian blue, maritime blue, cerulean blue, all of these colors. We think this is the base color because it doesn't have purple, it doesn't have green, it's just blue. So we'll see. If we're going to call that, actually, we're going to name it Naya Swami Blue. Naya means new. It's what he's creating as a new renunciate order. So it will have its own name. There's a color on the color chart called Yale Blue, which presumably was named after the university, so I figure if they can do it, we can do it. So, I just wanted to give you the end of that story, and that is the end of that story. Okay. So, there was a few elements in this chapter that I really thought did not get sufficient attention, and I wanted to give them to us. The primary one is, there are two factors here. Well, let me just start where I need to start. I really wanted to spend a little time on the phrase that Swami repeats over and over in this course, which is, where there is Dharma, there is victory. Yata Dharma, Tata Jaya. And that is one of the mottos of Ananda. Ananda has a few phrases which have always governed us. And Swamiji saw these words, where there is righteousness, where there is Dharma, there is victory. It was the motto of one of the royal families of one of the provinces of India when there were still Maharajas. And when he saw it in India in the early 50s, it just struck Swamiji as such a perfect articulation of the whole essence of the spiritual path that when he started Ananda, he put it right forefront. We say people are more important than things, meaning that the community is composed of its citizens, not of the things it does. And the welfare of the citizens must always be the first consideration. But the other part of it is, where there is Dharma, there is always victory. And it is such a deeply felt reality that the more profoundly you can drink that phrase in and integrate it into your life, because it becomes the foundation stone of another principle which is illustrated in this lesson, which is the principle of faith. Swamiji tells a number of stories about how he was faced with great obstacles, but he went forward, you know, knowing that there would be a divine response, and that divine response was a certainty. And the goodness of that response was also a certainty. And that's what enables him to be able to follow all the other rules that he's given us so far, which is to be able to generate energy with calm focus, to be able to see where he's going, and to know that the whatever he needs is going to be there. And just this whole concept of faith is one of the obviously fundamentals on the spiritual path. And now we're trying to apply it to this question of God taking care of us, not only in terms of our spiritual welfare, but also in terms of our material needs. And it, as I was saying, it just seemed to me that we need to spend a little more time on this. And Swami makes reference in this lesson also to the chapter in Autobiography of a Yogi, The Two Penniless Boys in Vrindavan, which is this demonstration of Master going off just as a boy and having all his needs met by God, even though his older brother, you know, totally disallowed that this was a possibility. So these are the elements of what I'd like to talk about tonight. First, I want to start with where there is Dharma, there is victory. And just give you a little bit of an idea of how this works. At one point, we were doing some classes on self-acceptance and self-esteem and so on like that, and we still do. You know, the project of coming to peace with your own nature is one of the... Excuse me for a second, but the red lights are flashing right outside, but I don't think they're actually. I think they've gone by. They were beautiful. You missed them. They were just absolutely gorgeous. It was totally distracting me. It put Jason's sweatshirt to shame. They were just so pretty. I thought they were stopping right out in front. In one context or another, Swamiji made a very interesting statement, because nowadays there's such a tremendous effort to accept yourself. Sometimes Swamiji will tell a story about a woman who was very overweight and also smoked like a chimney. And she took this course in order to, you know, to master these things. And at the end of the course, she was still very overweight and smoking like a chimney. But she said now she accepted herself that way. And, you know, Swami was raising the question whether this is actually progress or not. Now, of course, one can argue that the first possibility of moving forward is we have to not exactly be at war with ourselves. We have to get going in the right direction. But it was in that context he made a very simple statement. He said the only way to truly accept yourself is to have a clear conscience, which is, you know, the kind of bold, common sense statement that Swami is inclined to make in an age of political correctness when we're trying always to say that everything is okay no matter what it is. It's just relative. It's just your attitude. He said, no. The only way to really accept yourself is if you have nothing to be ashamed of, if you have a clear conscience about who you are. Now, none of us have a completely clear conscience if we move especially into the past. Sri Teshwar, in Autobiography of a Yogi, says, a phrase we all love to quote, "The past lives of all men are dark with many shames." We like to quote that because it just sort of helps us to feel that whatever horrendous memories we have of horrendously bad ideas that seem like good ideas at the time, we can feel that we're in good company. And what Sri Yukteswar was also saying with that statement was, it just really doesn't make any difference what you've been. What you've been is just entirely irrelevant. The only thing that matters is what you are now. What you are in this moment, what you aspire to become, that's the only reality that matters. The rest of it is just water under the bridge, really, literally. In the sense that we're only an energy flow. And once the energy has flowed through us, there's nothing left anymore, just the pattern of that energy. But there's no fixed reality. It's the ego's involvement with it that gives it a continuing reality. Now, quite apart from whether any of us can actually have a clear conscience or not, this principle of where there is dharma, there is victory, is, to my mind, one of the most comforting aphorisms on our spiritual path. Because what that says is, if in this moment I am living according to the highest principles, I understand the highest principles I'm capable of achieving, as long as I keep putting forward righteous energy, then everything else will follow. And I've often said to people, sometimes what I say is you have to do your dharma in a vacuum, meaning that there's no logical way in which your actions are going to connect to the results that you're trying to achieve. Or the odds against you are just overwhelming. And there's no way that you can rationalize out how this is all going to resolve. But you just say quietly to yourself, where there's dharma, there's victory. If I am moving according to righteousness, then that will bring eventually the result that I want. And of course, the other side of that is, how can I ever expect to emerge victorious if anywhere along the way in this project I'm violating the principles of dharma? Dharma is a word that bears just a moment to explain too, because it's not necessarily self-evident. Swami's given many explanations for it. The most common one people use is duty, but duty, it doesn't begin to describe it. Dharma is dharmic actions are those actions which expand consciousness. And the important point of that about that is that therefore dharma is different for different people. I know I was a guest once at the home of a unity minister, and this was a number of years ago, and he was very active in not merely an anti-war movement, whatever war we were fighting at the time, but a sort of let's dissolve all military options kind of movement. And I was having to not wholly endorse what he was doing, because I was saying to him, you know, if you have an individual person who's only ever lived for themselves, maybe a man who's only ever lived for himself and all his concern is just about his own pleasure and his own fulfillment, and he suddenly rises to the level of having national patriotism and is actually even willing, you know, to go out and work hard and become a soldier and even stand up for a cause he believes in and maybe even give up his life, for that person, that may be forward movement. You know, you can't say to every soldier, speaking of this man, speaking of myself, I don't think for me to become a nationalistic patriot and pick up a rifle